Hello, and welcome to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. This is where we look at various nutrition and fitness-related topics through the lens of application. We want to give you practical takeaways so that you can create your healthiest, best self backed by knowledge. Now, onto the episode with your host, Coach Lisa.
Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure to welcome a returning guest, Brandon DeCruz, an online nutrition and physique coach, certified nutritionist, internationally published fitness model, and national level NPC competitor. Brandon has been featured in publications like Men's Fitness Magazine, Muscular Development, Bodybuilding.com, and the Allen Aragon Research Review, where he's been a contributing author. Brandon, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Absolutely, Lisa. It's my pleasure. It's great to reconnect with you after, like we just discussed off air, like year of since our last podcast. But it's always nice to be able to catch up and reconnect with like-minded individuals. I think podcasting is an immensely beneficial platform for that, because like you just mentioned, and I just mentioned, I'm here in Jersey. So I'm in the Northeast and you're all the way in Germany right now. And we're able to get on the line for an hour, discuss different topics and really help people, not only in the areas that we live, but around the world that will listen to us.
Absolutely. And our last conversation, I really enjoyed, and I got a lot of positive feedback from it in regards to all the things we spoke about. For example, just the importance of rest and periodization when it comes to training and nutrition, but also the connection between strength training and insulin sensitivity. And we have some great questions that I prepared for today's topic as well. But before we get into it, well, first of all, every time I look on your social media, there are so many amazing, impressive progress pictures from your clients and other coaches that you support and help. So I just want to encourage everybody to go and check out Brandon's Instagram as well. I obviously put all the show notes, the links in the show notes. But yeah, I'm excited to hear also what your personal training looks like at the moment. Are you currently in a maintenance phase or building, or what's the deal?
So you are catching me right at an interesting time, because I'm right in a transitionary period. So I just came off the back of a 7-month building phase. And this was actually, this past week was the last week of this phase. And so essentially I did a titration of both calories. So I periodize everything in terms of my nutrition, my training. So I titrated up calories as well as titrated up my training volume, intensity. And I really did a delt specialization cycle. So I put a heavy emphasis on my delt training, especially my side delts, because that was one area that was lagging on my physique. So I got to a pretty high level of volume in terms of my own capacity. And I was training between 25 to 30 sets per week, working sets per week on delts, especially with a predominance and a bias towards side delts. And so I was doing a lot of length and overload work, really focusing on the lengthened position. So that was essentially what I did was I went from doing, years ago, I used to do a lot of dumbbell laterals, and that was something that was in vogue. And that really biases or overloads the delt in a shortened position. And so what I did in, you know, I guess in comparison this time was I did almost all of my delt work in a lengthened position where I used cable attachments and did different variations, different angles behind the back, cable laterals. I really tried to focus on the stretch position just because we're seeing a lot in the way of long length training. And now there's been like a little bit of a mis-extrapolation of the data. Some people will refer to that as stretch-mediated hypertrophy. That is not the mechanism behind it, but we do see when we look at a one-to-one comparison that long-length training, whether that be full range of motion or partial range of motion in that lengthened position. So, for instance, that could be the bottom of a back squat. That could be or bottom of a hack squat. That could be the bottom of a cable lateral raise in comparison to the top of a dumbbell lateral raise, because even if you went to the bottom on a dumbbell lateral raise, you wouldn't actually have tension in that position because gravity is pulling straight down. And so I did a lot of lengthened work. So I just wrapped up this building phase. And what I'm doing is a 1-week transition at maintenance just to reestablish my maintenance calories. Because obviously when you go into a building phase, especially an elongated building phase, there's a lot of compensatory mechanisms. So a lot of people in our industry will be familiar with the metabolic adaptations that occur from dieting itself. So there's down regulations in all four components of your total daily energy expenditure. So by what I mean by that essentially is when we go into a deficit and sustain it and we lose body fat and body weight, we see a down regulation in our BMR. So we're a lighter individual, we're burning less calories both at rest and then throughout the course of the day. We see a down regulation in our or a decrease in our thermic effective feeding, because say you go into a 500 calorie deficit, if the average person burns 10% of their calories per day from the thermic effective feeding, just the fact that you're eating less food, now you're expending less energy in the course of digestion, assimilation, and metabolism, all the nutrients that you're taking in. Then we also see what are called compensatory decreases in physical activity energy expenditure, which is comprised of exercise activity thermogenesis and then non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So from the exercise point of view, we have something called skeletal muscle work efficiency. And what we see is that for the same action, so it could be the lifting of a dumbbell in terms of a bicep curl, it could be a bench press, whatever it may be that you're doing, your body becomes, there's mitochondrial adaptations that essentially make your body more efficient. So you conserve calories, and for every movement you do, whether it be in the gym or it be in your day-to-day walking and movement, you're burning less calories for those same activities because you're a lighter human being first and foremost. And then also your body is trying to conserve energy. So there's less of an ATP leak in the mitochondrial membrane where you're not burning or you're not expending and wasting as many calories. And then the biggest aspect of metabolic adaptation is we see a downregulation in NEAT, which is what accounts for between 85 to 90% of metabolic adaptation as we know it, meaning metabolic adaptation refers to the discrepancy in the calories you burn as compared to what would be generally accounted for if we were only consider how much weight that individual lost. Now, on the inverse of that, when you increase body weight and increase muscle mass, we see an increase, a metabolic adaptation in a positive direction of all these areas. So we see an increase in resting metabolic rate or basal metabolic rate. We see an increase in our exercise activity thermogenesis because now you have more energy in the system. You're able to not only handle more work and recover more efficiently, but you're also in a state of positive energy balance, which allows you to more maximally stimulate muscle protein synthesis, which is an energetically costly process. We see that non-exercise activity thermogenesis goes up quite substantially. So if you look at like overfeeding studies from Levine, there's some individuals that upregulate their energy expenditure by up to 700 calories when in a 1,000 calorie surplus for an elongated period of time. And then we also have increases in thermic effective feeding because more food equals more work that your body has to put into the process of digestion. So really, when it comes down to maintenance, we have to realize that our maintenance calories are a range. And the reason I'm discussing this is because I need to reestablish what my maintenance is because I've been in a small surplus this entire time, aiming for a rate of gain of about approximately 1% per month throughout the last 7 months. And so now this week, what I'm doing is reestablishing things. I've decreased my calorie intake. I backtrack or back calculated my rate of gain over the last 4 weeks, essentially looking at exactly how much weight I was gaining, which was approximately 0.5 pounds, so a half pound per week. So I gained 2 pounds over the last month. I'm back calculating that and then putting myself and just essentially taking away those calories in terms of my current intake as compared to what it was last week. I'm going to be in this maintenance week for essentially just a week and see how my body responds, track my deviations in scale weight. And then next week, I will be starting a 12-week fat loss phase, which will be a actual photo shoot prep. So I've done a ton of modeling over the years. One thing that I really like doing, I competed as well. So I did 15 shows back in the day. Like I've competed many years. That is not my focus at this point in my life. Really, my greatest passion and something that takes up an immense amount of my time is coaching others. So I coach competitors, but I also coach lifestyle clients. And that at one point in my career, I had to kind of come to a fork in the road and decide, am I going to go all in on my own competing or am I going to go all in my clients? And in 2018, I brought a competitor of mine to Olympia, which was the top level of the sport. He was immense physique. And I kind of came into this position. I just competed at nationals, had done pretty well. And I said to myself, am I going all in on myself and going to continue seeing this out in terms of competing, or am I going to go all in on individuals like this individual, his name is Matt. And I chose the latter. And so I have not looked back since then. I haven't competed in the last 5 or 6 years at this point. However, I really find a lot of efficacy or a lot of benefit from staying in the trenches. I coach many other fitness professionals. And one thing that I see that lacks in this industry is a connection to the process itself. So there's a lot of individuals that will take clients through phases that they haven't done themselves or they aren't, and they're preaching principles that they don't execute on a daily basis. So it's really hard for them to relate. And I don't find that to be genuine. So I always want to be challenging myself. So I pick photo shoots every year or two where essentially what I'll do is I will line up schedule of photo shoots essentially with photographers I've worked with previously because I like tracking my changes over time. And it's really easy to do so when I'm going to go to the same studio with the same lighting and with the same photographer that's going to shoot me in particular angles and really be able to do a comparison. And so at the end of this summer, so at the end of August, I will be doing a series of photo shoots. So that's really what I'm getting myself ready for. And it also gives me a tangible goal. I like having a deadline and an end goal. And it's something that keeps me pushing. And it's not that I need that motivation because I'm very intrinsically driven, I guess. I don't rely on motivation. I have very good habits in place. but I also want something to shoot for. So this is something that's going to give me a North Star, essentially. And it's just going to help me push myself to that next level. And also, I have a good amount of clients right now that are in contest prep that are going to be competing this summer, whether that be national shows or regional shows. And I like being in the trenches with them. Like, I have not competed, like I said, in multiple years, but I still want to see myself make physique progress. I still want to be able to relate to others when they're struggling with a fat loss phase, with hunger, with all these different, you know, down regulations in their energy expenditure, and just feeling like these compensatory decreases in need where they feel like a sloth on the couch. Like, I like being in that situation so I can relate to others and be able to express not only the fact that I get where they're coming from, but here are the methods that I'm utilizing that I've used with other clients that will help to mitigate those issues that you're dealing with, whether it be excessive hunger, be excessive lethargy or lack of energy. And also, I want to continue to refine my skills. And one way I do that is with research. But the other thing is with practical application and really implementing different methodologies and philosophies from the research into practical application and into my own life. I look and I assess everything. I'm very analytical in terms of my own data. And then I'm able to say, is this worth it or not? Is this something, you know, I really take on the Bruce Lee mentality where it's like, take what's useful and then discard what's useless. And this is a way that I'm able to play trial and error on myself. And then the things that I find to be highly effective, I will run and utilize with the clients that I have the longest trajectory with. So I have a lot of long-term clients between 2 and 3 years that I often tell them, listen, I utilize this philosophy or this approach, this methodology. Are you open to it? Would you like to try this? And let's track your data and see how it goes. And I tell them my experiences as well as what the data shows in terms of research. And oftentimes, because we have such a good relationship, they're 100% in. So then I have all these case studies on these particular methods, and I'm able to continue to refine my approaches, and really I'm able to take principles and then really match it to the specific client that I'm working with.
This is so exciting. So many cool things to dig into. And first of all, Brandon, thank you so much for sharing what you're doing personally as well. And I couldn't agree more that as a coach, you kind of have to practice what you preach as well. And even just going through these different phases is important also. I personally have never stepped on stage, and that's why I would never prep a competitor or would feel comfortable prepping a competitor. But in any case, I think it's so important having those conversations with your clients in the sense of, this is not perhaps something that I have done myself, but maybe with some other clients, and would you be open to trying XYZ, and having those conversations of like, yeah, let's go through this together. And I also couldn't agree more on the fact that long-term clients are so much fun to work with, because you get to know their body better. The trust, the relationship, the connection is just getting stronger and stronger. So I absolutely love that you said that. But I also really respect and like that you mentioned you wanted to focus on one thing and do that really, really well. I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The One Thing by Gary Keller, but I love it. I think it's so helpful, and more people need to read it, first of all, but also just would be so much better off focusing on fewer things and doing them well, as opposed to spreading themselves super thin and trying to do everything a little bit and not succeeding at anything and just not having that mental clarity. So I just want to say, I think that that's really great that you made that decision. And then in regards to some of the things that you mentioned with your training, I'm curious because shoulders is also one of my personal focuses at the moment, glutes and shoulders, so very, very girly kind of split. I'm curious, what are your favorite delt exercises? I mean, you said yes in the lengthened position, but then, for example, would that be like utilizing a bench as well, so to get on an angle, or is it, do you personally prefer cable exercises, two dumbbells, or really a wide mixture of things?
Yeah, so I did particular things in what I refer to as a specialization cycle. So essentially what a specialization cycle is, and I do this with many clients, and it's very funny. I have many female clients that I actually run glute and delt specialization cycles. So it's right up your alley. But essentially a specialization cycle is a training cycle that is designed to focus on particular muscle groups. So generally how I do it with my own clients, or even with myself, is I will pick up to two body parts. And generally it's one larger group and one smaller group. So this could be, like in your instance, would be glutes, and then it would be deltoids. So that would be the secondary muscle group. For myself, I did chest and deltoids. And so chest was the larger muscle group, or pecs were the larger muscle group, and the secondary muscle group were particularly my side delts. And so for delt movements, what I did was I moved away from more pressing movements, because I'm already getting that crossover from So I went from doing, say, like high interior presses, and I just allowed that my pressing work from chest, which I'm doing low and also high incline presses and also dumbbell presses and things of that sort. I allowed that to be the stimulus for my interior and my front delts. And then I literally put most, like predominantly almost all the volume that I was doing. So say 25 out of 30 sets per week, just on my side delts. And I did a mixture of different, and I experimented with this. So I did a lot of wrist height. So essentially getting loaded in the wrist, you know, essentially putting the cable aligned with my wrist and doing a lot of cuffed cable lateral raises. And so that was one movement that I did a multitude of. I would do it multiple times a week. And then also behind the back cable laterals as well, to really get into that deep stretch position that you would not be able to get with a dumbbell or with even a machine cable lateral raise. And what I would do is I actually increase my delt training frequency. So I essentially look at training frequency as a dial or as a dosing procedure or a tool to essentially increase effective volume per week. And so what I did was I went from training delts two times per week to up to five times per week, so that I was able to spread out that dose between five to six effective working sets per session. So that's when I was alluding to the fact that my training volume got to 25 to 30 sets. This was not in a day. This was not in 2 days. I wasn't like doing all this junk volume. It was very heavily spread out throughout the course of the week. So every day I would essentially have a different deltoid variation that I would run through. And so another thing that I did within the programming aspect was I prioritized delts over other body parts. So if I was doing a delt and arm day, you know, side delts were always going first. And so these were just different programming variables that allowed me to put more of the stimulus and get a better training performances out of these this particular work, and really prioritizing that. Also within my chest work, because I was doing chest and deltoid specialization, there were some days that it was more like a push session. And so I would alternate between when I would essentially hit chest first and then when I would hit deltoids first. And in the past, I would always bias, and I think a lot of us do this, we always go for the bigger muscle group first. So we always put, if we were going to do a push day, it would always be chest, then deltoids, then triceps. There was days that it was deltoids, then chest, then triceps. So there was a lot of prioritization based off what I was trying to bring up. And it was very successful throughout the course of the phase. Unfortunately, towards the end of the phase, I was doing some home renovations and I tweaked my shoulder. And it's like, it was kind of ironic because, you know, if I was to say, it's funny, I got on a coaching roundtable recently and it was two other coaches, including Jeremiah Bear, who actually was who connected you and I. And he's been a client of mine for a long time. And they were laughing because they said, anyone that hears you saying that you're doing all this volume, they're going to automatically think that the work volume was what cause a shoulder issue. Or, you know, I'm going to refer to it as a niggle rather than an injury, because there's this biopsychosocial model within pain mm-hmm. science where, like, if you label something an injury, it often becomes like a self-limiting belief. It's a niggle. But I will tell you that I ended up, you know, causing a little bit of an ache and pain from just doing housework. So it's like just ironic. But it was a very productive lean building phase for me. I'm already, you know, almost 20 years into training. So at this point, a lot of what I do is not only for the physiological benefits. So right now we see in the research the last 2 to 3 years, we've seen a ton of research looking at lengthened bias training, which is why I did a change and transition over to doing a lot of delt work in that lengthened position. And from a physiological perspective, we're seeing higher amounts of tension in there, greater increases in cross-sectional areas. So we're seeing greater hypertrophic outcomes from the lengthened position, even in shortened bias movements. So for instance, like I was alluding to, the dumbbell lateral would be a dumbbell lateral raise would be a shortened bias movement, whereas the cable lateral raise can be more lengthened overloaded. And so we even see that in like leg extension studies. So there's a great study by Pedrosa and colleagues from 2021, where they looked at the leg extension and they looked at utilizing a full range of motion, so a full rep, then doing a partial range in just the top half of the rep, which you would go in the shortened overload perspective. And then they also put them in a more knee flex position. And so they had them just do the bottom of the rep in a partial rep, and they saw the greatest hypertrophic outcomes just from that bottom partial in that lengthened position, which is not something that you would think of a couple years ago with just being a leg extension. So we see advantageous benefits. So yes, a lot of times when I'm programming for myself and for my clients, I'm looking at the physiology. I like looking at hypertrophic outcomes rather than just like muscle protein synthesis data, because that's like a time course. It's a spot check on, you know, 1 to 2 days. I want to look at long-term outcomes in terms of 12 to 16 week intervention or 16 week trials and interventions. But then I also want to play with it in the gym myself and see the results, see the stimulus, you know, the stimulus proxies. Like I was getting better pumps in the gym. I was feeling more like, one thing I'll tell you, the first couple weeks of my delt specialization cycle, when I transitioned to it, you know, 7 months or so ago, it was like the first time in years that I actually had soreness in my side delts. And not that soreness is a proxy for growth, because we actually see that muscle damage. You look at the DeMoss studies, excessive muscle damage actually does increase muscle protein synthesis more, but actually it's because we need to take those resources and actually recover the muscle damage. So it's utilized for muscle damage repair. And it's only when you get into the repeated bout effects, when we get more acclimated and we have these fatigue mechanisms put in place, so we experience less muscle damage, that we actually see hypertrophic outcomes. However, soreness is a proxy that you're actually hitting the target musculature, because that would mean that you're putting tension on those muscle fibers, because that is what would cause, you know, the calcium ion accumulation, you know, fatigue mechanisms. We covered some of these in our last podcast, but like, it was the first time I actually felt soreness in my delts in years. So it was just, these are little things that you have to take what's in the literature. You have to experiment in the gym. Like, that is our lab. And then we also have to track changes over time, track our performance progressions over time. And for a lot of things in my mindset, and also you can look in the literature on this, when we see strength increases, whether that be from rep or load progressions across hypertrophy rep ranges. So the best way to put this is between like rep ranges of 5 to 15 reps, especially on isolation movements, that is an indication that you're growing muscle in that area. So for instance, if you are trying to grow your biceps, you want to see that your strength progression, whether that be rep progression or load progression across sets. So say you're doing 3 sets of 10 every single week. You want to see that you're either increasing load on that across time in an isolation movement, like a preacher curl. You want to see that going up over time, or that you're taking a load. So say you were doing 100 pounds for 3 sets of 10. We want to see you get 11 to 12 to 13 across all those sets, and really seeing essentially volume load increases, meaning the amount of load times reps times sets are going up over time, where sets are equated. Because essentially, if we look at it just from like a logical perspective, a stronger muscle is or a bigger muscle is a stronger muscle because it's capable of more force production. So logically, we should be getting stronger over time. And that doesn't mean that you're going to see your reps increase every week or your strength increase every single week, because progressive overload is more of an indication that adaptation has occurred and you're now capable of actually expressing that performance increase, rather than a lot of people chase progressive overload thinking that's what's going to induce hypertrophy. It's actually, that's kind of like ass backwards, to be honest with you. However, these were things I was able to play in practice. And it's also, I utilize a lot of specialization cycles with the clients that I work with, because A, it's something that I work with a lot of intermediate clients that are trying to get that advanced level. They're 5+ years in training. The average person I work with honestly has 10+ years in training. They're other coaches, they're dietitians, they're sports nutritionists, they're personal trainers. So it's like, I need to be able to get them to that next level. And they've done the global programs, which are very evenly spaced. And it's like, once you get to a certain level of advancement, if you have lagging muscle groups, it's either because you're not training them properly or you haven't provided them enough stimulus. However, if we're just going to, if I was to increase training volume to 20+ sets on every single muscle group, I wouldn't have the recovery capacity to do so. So I actually wouldn't get the benefits from that. So this is where taking a more strategic approach, where I take, say, Lisa, for you in particular, I was to increase your glute training volume as well as your delt training volume. But then I look at the rest of your physique and I say, wow, she's got really great back development. Her quads are in a great place, hamstrings. Let's move that back to either minimum effective volume or maintenance volume, so that we are going to increase her adaptive resources. And say that your total volume budget for the week is 100 sets, 100 working sets per week. That means that I can't have every single, you know, body part, the 8 major muscle groups at 20 sets per week, because now we're going way past your recovery capacity and probably also the time constraints that you're dealing with. So we have to look at meeting in the middle between what's optimal for someone's result or for someone's goals, what's practical for their lifestyle, and then looking at what can they actually recover from. And that's where utilizing a more strategic approach to utilizing maybe some volume progressions and performance progressions and increases in frequency on particular muscle groups while backing off others can really allow us to springboard forward in terms of the progression of particular muscle groups. And also just from like an adherence and a consistency standpoint, it makes it really fun to be able to chase after a goal and be like, listen, I'm going to trash my chest and delts. Like, I'm really going to go after it. I'm going to really focus on increasing performance. And I'm going to realize that I'm not going to be like PRing my hack squat every single week on this, because I'm going to be putting so much extra emphasis, time, attention, energy, and focus on my chest and my deltoids. However, once I get done with these, you know, I did it for 7 months. However, I generally will do 2 to 3 back-to-back mesocycles with a client. So that could last anywhere between, say, 12 to 24 weeks, you know, in terms of our specialization cycle. And then if and when that person is satisfied with the development that they've gotten, or they just want to go on to the next goal. So you go from wanting to do glutes and deltoids, and then you tell me, hey, Brandon, what I want to do is biceps and hamstrings. And then we switch the emphasis and we keep we lower what we just worked on to maintenance or to minimum effective volume. We keep those gains and let them cement. And then we focus on the next tangible goal.
Very cool. And yeah, several things once again. So firstly, the cuffed delt raise, that was new to me a few months ago. And I absolutely love it because I'm someone I tend to overuse my grip in exchange for not targeting that particular muscle then. And so using a cuff has helped me personally a lot. And in regards to what you were saying about specialization and so on, I find especially with people that are kind of in that intermediate space, it is as you said, often coming from more generic programs and so on. It's also sometimes about, at least that was for me also the case, about learning how to activate particular muscles better, and specialization phases, in my opinion, are super helpful for that. So like, for instance, I was never able to activate my glutes properly, especially during things like quads or whatever, to even just feel them properly. Same thing with lats and so on. So I think a specialization phase and cycles can really, really help with that in particular also. And then the other thing that I wanted to go back to was you mentioned how NEAT is one of the things that is so, so adaptive in a calorie surplus. And yeah, I am familiar with the study that you referred to, where some people, I think they increased their calorie intake by like 1,000 or something like that on average. And one person increased their NEAT so much, he only gained like a pound or something ridiculous over the course of a month. And it's just, it's so impressive to me how adaptive our NEAT really can be. And unfortunately, I mean, as the name says, it's not something that we really can consciously control or influence. Of course, we can track our steps and blah, blah, but technically that's not even NEAT. But yeah, I find it super interesting. And I'd love to talk more about like how people can make sure they get the most out of their metabolic rate. Like you said, of course, you know, increasing or having a reasonably high calorie intake is one thing. But yeah, what are some things where people are like, I want to be able to eat as much as possible, and my current body weight?
Yeah, absolutely. So we can go in like a hierarchical principle, because I have certain strategies that I utilize. And I'll be honest with you, metabolism is one of the topics that I get the most questions on. I've done a ton of discussions, and I've done a ton of presentations on metabolic adaptation. And then also a concept called energy flux, which essentially is where it's a model that I use with a lot of clients, which is essentially eating more and moving more. And this really influences your total daily energy expenditure. But when we're just talking about methods and strategies to increase your metabolic rate or keep it high, the first thing that I'm always focusing on with clients is keeping yourself sufficiently fueled. So one of the most effective strategies and ways to keep your metabolic rate high and increase your total daily energy expenditure is to sufficiently fuel yourself and to make sure, and this is the really important part of it, to make sure that you spend more time out of a calorie deficit than you do in a deficit. And this is because if you're someone who's constantly dieting and eating less than your body requires, for a prolonged period of time, your body will downregulate all its components of its total daily energy expenditure. And this is due to the metabolic adaptations that we discussed previously that we experience when we're dieting. Now, what you need to realize is your metabolism is extremely adaptive. And the most effective way to reverse these metabolic adaptations is to increase your calories back to at least your maintenance calorie intake so that your body is sufficiently fueled for both your training and then your activities of daily living, and to stay out of a deficit for a prolonged period of time. And this is because getting out of a deficit and sufficiently fueling yourself helps upregulate your metabolism and increase your total daily energy expenditure through all four components. So what I do is oftentimes what ends up happening to me in terms of my coaching practice is because I talk about a lot of these concepts and about dieting, and I've done, you know, a lot of work on relative energy deficiency and hypothalamic amenorrhea. And actually, relative energy deficiency is something that you and I discussed in the beginning of our last podcast, because I suffered from that myself before that was even a diagnosis. So I have a big passion for helping people in a position where they feel like they don't have other options, or they feel like they've been spinning their wheels. And a lot of times I'll have someone who comes to me with a long history of dieting and chronically underfueling themselves. And what they have to do is they'll remark to me and they'll send me over their data, and they have to sustain a very low calorie intake consistently to continue losing weight. And what I'll usually do is I'll take them through what I refer to as a metabolic restoration phase, where I increase their calories back to maintenance. And then I also adjust their macronutrient composition. I improve their diet quality. And then I also dial in their training, their physical activity levels, and their lifestyle. And due to pulling all these levers and really working on the the system as a whole, I have a big philosophy within my coaching that a healthy body is a responsive body. So it's not just about the X's and O's of like calories and macros. Like I need to look at your calories, your macros, your food composition, your food quality. I want to know your activity levels, your stress levels. You know, I'm looking at your sleep quality. I'm going through your training in terms of intensity, volume, the actual periodization of the program. And so what I generally see with these individuals, when I'm able to pull upon these levers, and especially from a sufficient fueling perspective, is I'm able to get a restoration of their basal metabolic rate, which has been suppressed from being in elongated periods of being in a deficit. We get obviously an increase in the thermic effect of feeding because now they're eating more food. So their body has to process or burn more calories through the process of digestion assimilation. We're able to increase NEAT because not only are they more subconsciously active because we're putting more energy in the system, but also I'm able to titrate up their steps because now they have more energy and they feel less lethargic and less downregulated and less sluggish because now they actually have like physical and chemical energy running through their body. We also see an increase in their exercise activity thermogenesis. And this is because now they have more calories to fuel hard and intense training. And I've also put a progression model in place where I'm ensuring that they're overloading over time. They're trying to progress their training performance. Whereas a lot of people that come to me from a dieting mindset, it's about training to burn calories. And then also they're doing things in, you know, because they're underfueled, they're chronically underfueled. Essentially, they have such little energy that they're not seeing their performance increase over time. And another thing that I really check, and I'm big on blood work, really like to get a look under the hood. And I don't want to guess about things. I want to test them. And so I see improvements in sex hormone production like testosterone and estradiol and even progesterone. I'll see an improvement in hormone production such as their thyroid output, which we know is a huge influencer for our metabolic rate and energy expenditure. So these are all ways to increase their total daily energy expenditure and their metabolism. Now, the next thing that we want to do to keep your metabolic rate high is to resist and train in a progressive manner where you aim to build and maintain muscle mass. And this is especially important for those who want to keep their metabolic rate up because the amount of muscle mass you have is the strongest correlate to how many calories you burn per day, both at rest and throughout the course of the day in terms of your metabolic rate and then also your total daily energy expenditure. And how I always try to get this across to clients is like, a lot of them are focused so much on fat loss, and fat loss is an immensely beneficial goal. I love that. However, a lot of people don't realize how beneficial it could be focusing and changing that paradigm and focusing on muscle because a lot of people are not only, they think they're over fat. And really what it is they're under muscle. And if they're able to get across the fact that muscle burns approximately three times as many calories at rest as fat does. So you're going to get so much bang for your buck by building and maintaining muscle. And then we can always focus on a fat loss phase after. The next strategy that I'm big on and is very effective for increasing metabolic rate and maintaining a high metabolic rate is a high protein diet. And this is because a high protein diet can increase your resting metabolic rate, as consistently eating a high protein intake can help you increase the amount of lean mass you have, which will allow you to burn more calories both at rest and throughout your day-to-day activities. And maintaining a high protein intake also has the benefit that if you do go into a fat loss phase, so you are someone that this next season of your life, you're deciding, listen, I'm going to get as lean as possible. Well, one of the most advantageous ways to go about that from a nutritional perspective is to keep your protein intake high because it's going to allow that, it's going to have a repartitioning effect essentially. So it's going to allow that more of the weight that you lose during that fat loss phase comes from fat mass and less of it comes from lean mass, which is one of the most effective ways to preserve your metabolic rate and your total daily energy expenditure. We also see that following a high protein diet can increase your total daily energy expenditure by increasing the thermic effect of feeding and increasing muscle protein synthesis rates, which are both very energetically expensive processes. So we see that protein has the highest thermic effect of all the macronutrients. So that means that you're going to burn more calories through the process of digesting and assimilating protein than you do any other macro. So when you eat protein, approximately 20 to 30% of those calories are burned off through diet-induced thermogenesis. Another added benefit that a lot of people don't think about is just the process of stimulating muscle protein synthesis. We always kind of, correlate that with the process of muscle growth, which it is. And that's an energetically costly process. However, it requires so much ATP to run that process in and of itself, which is why if you ever look at muscle protein synthesis studies, it doesn't run for all day, except in the one study by Jorn Tromelin, where they gave them 100-gram bolus of protein. If you actually look at most muscle protein synthesis studies, we see that it peaks within an hour and a half and comes back to baseline within 3 hours because it's such an energetically costly process. So by stimulating muscle protein synthesis through hard training and sufficient protein intake, you're going to increase your total daily energy expenditure. We actually see that in randomized control trials, even in metabolic wards. So I know that there was a study, I believe it was 2021 by Oliveira, and they saw I want to say just by increasing the protein intake of the diet, eating at maintenance, they saw that these individuals increased their total daily energy expenditure and then also increased their fat oxidation rates. Where the group, it was a crossover study. So they went through both diets. And one diet, I believe, was 15% of calories from protein. And the other diet was 40% of calories from protein. And on the 40% of calories from protein, even though they were given their maintenance intake based on a BOM calorimeter, when they actually went through that intervention and ate that high amount of protein, they actually lost fat throughout the process because they went into a state of negative energy balance unintentionally because of the increase in thermic effective heating and muscle protein synthesis and increase in total daily energy expenditure. And then last but not least, probably the last easy way or easy to apply nutritional principle for keeping your metabolic rate high is to eat a diet that consists of mostly whole unrefined food. So we're talking lean protein sources, fruits and vegetables, grains, and like unrefined fats like nuts, because the less processed a food source is and the more unrefined is, the higher the thermic effect of feeding it has. So when you eat whole foods as compared to their processed counterparts, you burn more calories through the process of metabolizing that meal. And this effect can be pretty significant, where this is kind of where I don't agree with a lot of people that are huge advocates for if it fits your macros, where it's just like, you know, whatever, as long as it fits your calories, it fits and just make it happen. It's like, dude, really when it comes down to it, yes, all calories are created equal, but not all sources of calories are created equal. And this is, you know, we can substantiate this with a ton of data, but probably the best example of this is there was one study, I believe it's a 2010 study, where researchers took and compared the post-meal energy expenditure levels. So how many calories were burned off in the process of digestion after consuming a meal in the same individuals when they had a whole food meal that was a sandwich featuring whole food ingredients versus a sandwich that was made up of processed ingredients. And really what this was, and it's not even a meal that you would think of from like whole foods versus like processed foods. It was a whole grain and cheddar cheese sandwich versus a American bread, like, you know, white bread and say like Kraft Singles sandwich that was processed. And what they saw was they put these individuals in two different conditions where in one condition, they had the whole food sandwich and the other condition, they had the processed food sandwich. And what they found was despite calories and macros being exactly equal, when they measured the post-meal like calorie burn for these meals, they found that the whole food sandwich increased energy expenditure by nearly 50% more as compared to the processed food meal. So when we look at the thermic effect of feeding between the two meals, we see that the thermic effect of feeding of the whole food meal was 20% of calories. So for whatever calories they took in, say it was 500 calories, they burned 100 calories in that process. However, for the processed food meal, despite having the exact same energetic content, so the exact same calories, their thermic effect of feeding was 10.7. So these are all like low barrier to entry methods that we can increase your energy expenditure and we can also keep your metabolic rate high, which is something that so many people desire, which is why metabolism and, you know, metabolic rate and all these topics are so interesting, as well as it's something we get so many questions as coaches. I can't tell you how many times I've covered, you know, probably done 15 podcasts on metabolic adaptation and conference seminar presentations and things of that sort, because it's something that's so interesting to many people. And they're always wondering and they're looking, you know, they'll ask me, what supplement can I take to boost my metabolic rate? Or, you know, is drinking, you know, this type of water, like ionized water, going to increase my metabolic rate? And it's like, I know that these things sound simple, but really when it comes down to it, like resistance training, building muscle, maintaining a high protein intake. There is actually a study from the late 90s where they found that when they switched people from, they actually did a calorie equated diet where essentially what they did was they replaced the amount of carbs in a diet with more protein. So it was like a comparable swap where I think in one diet was 11% protein. And then they went and increased that protein intake by 18%. And they just removed the calories from carbs because they're energetically equal. So 4 calories per gram in both of those situations. And they saw that the 24-hour energy expenditure increased by something like 120 calories just from replacing the same amount of calories from carbohydrate with protein. It's like, these are such simple yet influential levers that you can get. Like, think about 100 calories extra. If you do that over the course of 30 days, no, it's 120 calories. So essentially that's 3,600 calories over the course of a month. You just lost a pound of fat by just making this simple swap. And a lot of times we look for these sexy like gimmicks and shortcut solutions, but there really are some fundamental principles that we can put in practice and into play that could be massively beneficial for the people that we work with. And I'm hugely into the minutia and into the nuances. I love discussing these things, but oftentimes I really try to, like, one thing that I really try to do is bridge the gap between research and information and practical application. And I really try to simplify things down to a level that people can actually like practically apply these.
Thank you for summarizing that all these great points at the end as well. I couldn't agree more. And I do want to highlight a few things that you said also in the sense of whole foods. Firstly, so much more satiating than processed foods. And of course, protein being the most satiating macro also. And I mean, if we know one thing, it is that if people are not as hungry on a diet, they're so much more likely to stick with it, right? Or to not cheat on their diet, etc. So I think for everyone listening, even more a reason to really hone in on those whole foods. And of course, you mentioned how important thyroid health is for metabolic health also. And if we're eating more whole foods, if we're eating those cruciferous vegetables and nuts and all these kind of things, we're really helping supporting our thyroid, as opposed to, for me, every food that we eat is either boosting our body or nourishing our body, or maybe sometimes kind of like neutral, but sometimes also harming. So, you know, with every food that we eat, we can make a decision. While absolutely all it fits, if it fits your macros, can help with adherence to an extent also. And there is great benefits to that too. Generally speaking, I'm definitely someone for 80-90% whole food. So absolutely love that. And on the point of more protein, I actually spoke to Bill Campbell not too long ago, and he mentioned a study that he did where they literally just, as you said, like increased protein in I think it was sedentary women, obese sedentary women. And it might even have been like above the calorie of the other groups, so not isocaloric, but more like protein just on top, and they burned more, or they lost weight simply by increasing protein. They didn't add any exercise, nothing. So like, people listening, if you're super lazy and you know you're not going to adhere to the exercise part, which I highly recommend you do, but if you don't, you know, start with that protein. That is such a great quote-unquote hack. And of course, the other thing that you mentioned was simply not dieting for too long. And you actually said yourself that you were in a gaining phase for 7 months now. Is that correct? Is that generally like the minimum that you recommend people go into a gaining phase? Because I mean, if we're like, oh, I'm just going to do a gaining phase for a month or two, chances you're not going to see much by the end of it, in my opinion, are reasonably high, especially if you do a cut afterwards. It's kind of like, yeah, probably not going to expose too much of a difference there.
Yeah. So in terms of duration, I often like to, and now it's hard because it's so client specific, it's individual specific. I'm looking at lab work and looking at all their biofeedback and where they're coming from. However, I generally like to approach this in a method where I am going to put my clients in the best position to succeed. And most people that come to me, they want a lean muscular physique. Now, oftentimes because lean comes first, they often focus on the diet. However, a lot of times what that results in, and a lot of times when people come to me, I'm trying to help them avoid the mistakes of their past and then also take a more optimal approach to their goals, not only from a results perspective, but also from a sustainability and a maintenance perspective. So a lot of times people want a leaner physique, so they focus on the fat loss phase and they keep going back to the well until it's dry. And really what it comes down to is you have to, if you want a better physique, and you want a lean muscular physique, we have to realize that muscle is a priority there. That's going to be the biggest influencing factor on the way that you look. And so within that, when it comes to a building phase, I like clients to commit to at least 4 months. That is probably the minimum effective duration that I could really see being tangible enough for a long and substantial period of time to actually get some muscle gain results. And this is going to matter on the person's advancement, their level, you know, a level of adherence and their ability to execute on a plan, but they're spot on. I've seen some pretty impressive transformations from a muscle growth perspective within 4 months. However, what I do, I can put out there as a general proxy, and this is something that has been very time tested within my own coaching practice, is that generally what I want to do is two things essentially. The first thing is I want clients at maintenance or out of a deficit. So that could be at maintenance intake or in a slight surplus for longer throughout the time course of the year then they are in a deficit. So that could easily be like this. This could be that if someone has general great body composition and they have the goal of getting a lean muscular physique, that we spend 9 months out of the year in either maintenance or in a surplus, and then 3 months a year in a cut. But another proxy that I like to look at, and it's kind of just a heuristic essentially, is I generally often, or what I found the best results in, is having a client take a 4-to-1 paradigm or 4-to-1 ratio. So for instance, if we are going to approach or pursue a goal of optimizing your body composition and building a more muscular physique, but also getting you lean in the process, improving your metabolic health, and really getting you to feel better, look better, and function better, I want to make sure that you're spending approximately 4 times longer in a building phase than you are in a cut. Because when we look at the trajectory or even the time course of adaptations in terms of muscle growth as compared to fat loss, muscle growth is a far slower process. And so it's going to take more time to build momentum. It's going to take more time to accumulate, new muscle tissue. It's going to take more time to really sustain those adaptations in terms of actually morphological adaptations. We're actually increasing muscle mass and really getting yourself in a well-fueled state where you're seeing progression week out and week out and letting those mount. And it's kind of like making deposits into a bank, essentially. And so with fat loss, we can go much quicker. So if we look at if we compare and contrast the rate of loss versus the rate of gain, a lot of times in evidence-based practice, and this is something that I will attest to myself, generally we see that a recommendation, and this is one by two good friends of mine that I've interviewed multiple times, been at conferences with, and it's Alan Aragon and Eric Helms. Both of them would recommend, they did a 2014 fat loss, or it was essentially a contest prep guide, essentially it was a review paper, and they recommended for the optimal rate of fat loss and also muscle retention to target a rate of loss between 0.5 to 1% of body weight loss per week. And so the maths on that would be 1%. I will even titrate that down a little bit for females that are smaller and it's harder to induce a calorie deficit. My ranges for rates of fat loss, now this is on the average across a fat loss phase. So this doesn't mean that in week one, when we lower your calories and you lose some glycogen, that you might not lose over 1%. What I'm looking at, say an 8 to 12 week fat loss phase, over that course of that phase, I like clients losing between 0.25 to 1% rate of loss per week. So that is on the fat loss side. However, on the muscle growth side of things, we would want to see that a client generally gains at 0.25% of gain per week of body weight. So if you think about that, that's a 4-to-1 ratio. So fat loss occurs 4 times as quickly as muscle growth occurs. So we would want to make sure that we're investing more time into the slower process, which is muscle growth. So for instance, if I have a client, and often this is the paradigm that I use, if I have a client that does a 6 to 8 month building phase, oftentimes I'll go to that 8 month mark with them, 2, 4 back-to-back 4 month cycles of building. I often will then transition them into a 2 to 3 month cut. So we're looking at that 4-to-1 ratio, because over those 8 months, they've been able, especially with the approach that I take, which we could discuss in terms of nutrition for muscle growth, but I'm going to take a lean building approach. So this is going to be a slight deficit or a slight surplus that they're in. We're going to maximize the amount of lean mass accretion and minimize the amount of body fat that they're gaining throughout that process. So over the course of 8 months, they're going to gain mostly lean mass, but there is going to be some fat mass accrual. This is a part of the process, because being in a surplus, you're not going to net every single one of those excess calories into muscle, skeletal muscle tissue, unless you're enhanced or unless you're a newbie or you've been detrained or all these other factors that could be taken into consideration. But for someone that's advanced, most times you're going to gain a little bit of body fat. But say over the course of 8 months, they gain 8 to 12 pounds. But out of that, they only gain 2 to 4 pounds of fat. We can lose that in 2 to 4 weeks, because fat loss is such a quick and efficient process as compared to muscle growth. But if you did the opposite, which is what many people make the mistake of doing, they spend 8 months in a fat loss phase in a deficit. They lose not only body fat and they lose body weight, but they also lose lean mass in the process. Then they set themselves up for body fat overshooting effect, because the loss of lean mass, so loss of lean body mass, predisposes you to rebounding in terms of fat mass, because we have compensatory mechanisms in our body that want to restore that lean mass. So when you lose lean mass, especially in an aggressive diet deficit, which is either very deep in terms of the actual caloric deficit that you're reducing yourself by, or the duration is really long, you expose yourself to low energy availability. You expose yourself to catabolic processes, which cause you to be more predisposed towards muscle loss. So due to that, you end up losing lean mass. It dysregulates your appetite, because muscle is one of the biggest appetite regulating effects. And then you're more predisposed to regaining body fat. And then oftentimes what ends up happening is people regain as much fat or more than they lost in the process. And then they want to go right back into a diet. So a lot of people spend 8 months dieting and then they might say, I'll go to maintenance, or, I'll try to build muscle for 2 to 4 months. And it's like, you should do the inverse. Let's get 8 months of building muscle, really sustaining sufficient energy availability, really fueling your performance, getting progressions, and really increasing the amount of muscle that you have on your frame to build the shape out that you want to reveal in that shorter fat loss phase after.
I really want to bookmark what you said about us dieting, or people dieting too much, and them essentially setting themselves up for gaining more fat. And I think that is not known enough. People just think like, okay, maybe at worst I'm like reaching metabolic adaptation, but that actually entails a predisposition for excessive fat gain or for fat gain if you are constantly dieting, etc. Really, really a great point to highlight. And I know that, or you said that you are now in a transition period, but in maintenance and then going into a cut for a photo shoot. But many people listening perhaps are thinking of, okay, summer is coming up, is sort of on the doorsteps. And let's perhaps assume that they have set themselves up for success as opposed to for gaining weight quickly. But what can they do? What would be your main tips for looking somewhat lean for the summer, even though we're already in, well, June almost, basically?
Yeah, so there are two main things that I would advise individuals to do if they're looking to look leaner, whether it be for the summer or even if you hear this after the fact and you just want to be leaner for any season of your lives. And these are two strategies I've used with myself and other clients, you know, used with myself and then other clients to achieve this goal. And I really want to, you know, harp down on the first one, which is you're going to want to focus on building and maintaining muscle. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes down to it, the amount of muscle you have on your body is what gives shape to your physique and what will influence how you look, you feel, and you function. And I've worked with well over 1,000 clients at this point, and the most drastic transformations I've seen have been with clients who have bought into the process of building muscle, as adding 5 to 10 pounds of lean mass on your frame and on your physique will do so much more for how you look and feel about yourself than losing 5 to 10 pounds of fat. I really want to get that message across because I'm a huge advocate for fat loss. There's many people that come to me and I diet many of my clients. And oftentimes every client that I work with is eventually going to go through a fat loss phase because this is a very popular and prominent goal. However, I often prioritize the muscle building process first and foremost. And then also when you build muscle, it makes how you look, it makes essentially you look leaner at your current body composition, also helps to decrease your current body fat percentage. And I'll explain that a little bit more because a lot of times people, they're kind of like myopically focused on one thing. So they're like, well, if I'm building muscle and you're not telling me I'm losing body fat because we're not going into a deficit, how's my body fat going down? And it's like, I'll give you an example. So say you're 150 pounds at 20% body fat currently, and you decide to go into a recomp phase or a lean building phase. And if you think about it right now, you have 30 pounds of fat on your frame to begin with. Well, if you gain 10 pounds of muscle and you really stay committed to the process, but your fat mass stays the same, you're now 160 pounds with that same 30 pounds of fat mass. So now your body fat has technically gotten down to 18.5% body fat because you've increased your lean mass to fat mass ratio. So that's one way to really change the paradigm of how you look at weight loss, weight gain, especially from a muscle growth and body composition perspective. And then the second thing I would suggest for all of you out there that want to get leaner is to move more and increase your physical activity levels through increasing your steps. So in my own coaching practice, I often will utilize what I refer to as a high energy flux lifestyle approach to body composition improvement. And so just so your audience knows, energy flux, all that really refers to is energy turnover in the body. So that means it's looking at the relationship between our energy intake from food and then also the energy expenditure levels from our activities of daily living. So most people who come to me do so with a few primary goals. And they want to be able to maintain a leaner muscular physique where they look better, they feel better, and they function better. But the big caveat to that is they want to do it in a more maintainable approach than they've done in the past. Or they want to be able to eat more and be able to maintain their body composition progress on a higher amount of calories. So this kind of ties into the whole like increasing and maintaining a higher metabolic rate. And really when we look at it from a logical perspective, the recipe for being able to eat more is to build more muscle and to move more. So besides focusing on progressive resistance training programming with the clients that I work with, one of the other levers that I use, and I would advise everyone out there to try within your own life is, you know, if you want to be able to eat more, you want to utilize a strategy that's going to help you actually buffer those calories. So essentially what I do is I use this high energy flux model as a method of increasing calorie intake while, you know, keeping them lean because I'm having them eat more and move more. And throughout that, they're in a sufficiently well-fueled state. So we're able to continue to work on building muscle and we're able to ensure that they're in a good state of energy availability. They have more than enough dietary flexibility. So they're very consistent as compared to what they've been in the past where they felt in this very restricted mindset. And when we really look at it, the issue with society today and why so many people are out of shape or they're unhealthy or even they're just unhealthy or unhappy with their body composition is that their energy expenditure and their energy output doesn't match their calorie intake. So, you know, if we look at our modern food environment and our evolutionary drive to eat like delicious hyperpalatable foods, you know, it's less likely for those that are living a sedentary lifestyle to be able to appropriately match their low energy expenditure level, so their low amount of calorie burn with a low calorie intake, and actually consistently maintain that over the course of their lives. So I found this massive benefit to having clients move more and be able to eat more to maintain a better body composition. So really my focus with the clients that I use this approach with is to turn this principle of high energy flux into a lifestyle for them, where I really incorporate what I'm doing into their nutrition, their training, their movement, as I want to fuel their training so that their performance continues to improve over time, which is going to increase their energy expenditure and allow them to have the freedom to eat more. I want them fueled for their activities of daily living, so it's easier for them to move more and stay active. So now they're burning more calories through that, you know, mechanism. They have higher NEAT levels, they have higher step counts. And I also want to improve their recovery capacity, their positive habits, and like all aspects of their life, so that they feel good, they're functioning well, and then they also are able to shift out of this dieting mindset. And dieting can be immensely beneficial, but what I find with a lot of individuals is they kind of get caught in like this hamster wheel. So they're in what I refer to as a mindset of restriction and subtraction. And what I'm trying to do through my coaching is I'm trying to look towards interventions based on their nutrition, their training, their lifestyle, and their habits and behaviors, where I'm able to shift them from that mindset of restriction and subtraction into a mindset of abundance and addition, where I get them out of this chronically downregulated and metabolically, you know, adapted state of eating less all the time and always focusing and feeling like they have to be restricted or they're going to massively gain weight and rebound like they have in the past. And I get them to a state where their body is functioning better. They're more well-fueled. They have a better relationship with food because it's not this constant dichotomy of like underfueling themselves and then overeating on weekends, being what I refer to as like a weekday dieter, where you're on track Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday. And like Friday comes and you've just like, you have no willpower left. You're unmotivated and you just eat everything in sight. And it's like every single week you have to restart the process and it's so unmotivating and frustrating. And really what I'm trying to do is incorporate fitness, nutrition, training, all these positive habits and behaviors into someone's lifestyle so that they can look leaner. They can maintain a higher metabolic rate. So they have higher daily energy expenditure and they can really live a life that's more fulfilled or more fulfilling in a body they love.
Oh, an abundance mindset is so beautiful in all areas of life. And yes, absolutely nutrition as well. And I love what you said earlier, even about most people are not necessarily, or they do have excess body fat, but what, more than anything, they are under muscled. So love that you're really honing in on that point. And what I hear you say with that too, is that people need to disconnect more from the number on the scale, because obviously if we're building more muscle, weight is going to go up. And I think that that's one of the main challenges, but they're coming into play your work on the mindset when it comes to not restricting, not keeping that number on the scale super, super low. So really lots and lots of great points and takeaways. And I hope people were taking some notes also. But Brandon, I really respect your time and I really appreciate you coming on here once again and talking to us. We could have kept on going for another hour. Maybe we have to do a third session at some
Count
point.
Count me in. I think we got one more topic. So whenever you're ready, let me know and I'll be happy to be back.
Perfect. Absolutely. I'm sure we'll have lots more to add to that also. But yes, to finish off, you can shout out your Instagram maybe and all the other handles I'll put in the show notes. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. First and foremost, thank you so much, Lisa. It's been an incredible conversation. I always really enjoy these and you put out great content and really have so many interesting questions that I always really enjoy engaging in these. I think we covered a great amount of topics last time, and I think these were very interesting as well. So first and foremost, I hope that your audience loves them and I can't wait to hear the feedback. But for any of you guys out there, if you need anything from me, feel free. The best place to reach me, honestly, is through my email. I kind of live on email. So that's betacruzfitness@gmail.com. I put out daily content in terms of educational posts or client posts on Instagram, which is Brandon DeCruz_. And then I'm also the host of the Chasing Clarity Health and Fitness podcast. And that is, we're already like 113 episodes into our podcast. And that's really where I take deep dives into physiology, into fat loss, into energy flux, all these different processes and all these different concepts. And I really try to answer questions and create, like the name implies, I'm trying to take complex topics and break it down in a clear and concise manner where you have clarity when you leave or when you stop listening to the podcast. So I would love, if you love what Lisa's doing here, I would love you to check out my podcast and give me feedback.
Awesome. Thank you, Brandon.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, or share the episode on social. Very much appreciated. You can also follow us on Instagram at Nutrition Coaching and Life, or head to our website, www.nutritioncoachingandlife.com, where we provide more valuable content. Have a wonderful day. Now go out and work on your best self.